The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
And it's hour number two. Welcome. Come on in Thursday, September 17th. Glad you are here. We are headed to the phones at 866-660-5759. And at 8:35, just a half hour from now, we're going to talk to a great writer, a fascinating satirist, a guy who's written stuff that is funny, stuff that is smart, stuff that is insightful. His latest book, P.J. O'Rourke, is A Cry from the Far Middle, Dispatches from a Divided Land. And I'm fascinated to talk to P.J. because you know how I feel about division, divisiveness, and et cetera, et cetera. I think it's fantastic. I love divisiveness. And by that, I mean, and I'm only partially tongue in cheek, because things that when people are divided, what does it mean? It means everyone is going to their natural habitat. It means conservatives are actually being conservative. Liberals are being actually liberal. I want people to be truthful. I want people to be themselves. The notion of centrists, the notion of the middle, I think is kind of a myth. That I don't know if there really are that many moderates. I think what you have is people who are conservative on some things and liberal on others, rather than just kind of 50-50 namby-pamby about everything. And some people who like to pitch themselves as moderates, especially among like moderate Republicans, what they are is actually just flat out liberal. They just don't want to tell you so. So anyway, it'll be fun. P.J. O'Rourke, A Cry from the Far Middle, Dispatches from a Divided Land. Already 866-660-5759. We are in Garland. Bruce, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you, sir?
I'm okay, guy. Hey. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Earlier in the week, I think it was Monday, I called my doctor's office to see if I could get a substitute for a drug. I've had the price increase for 3 times, actually, in the last 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so they waited. They didn't call me back till yesterday morning. It took about 3.5 days. And they said there isn't really a good substitute. The doctor wants me to continue with that. But they said they'd been overwhelmed with calls by senior patients. He has a lot of senior citizens. That exactly the same issue. And so the nurse and I were discussing the possibility that Trump hasn't mentioned anything about prescription drugs since last December, pre-COVID.
Actually, he has. He's been talking about various marketplace remedies that he feels that will bring prescription drug prices down.
Well, I don't know when it was, but the last I heard was in this, I think in maybe December of last year. And then the COVID came, and I actually haven't heard anything since COVID. And she was saying that she is, well, maybe they're thinking that the drug companies feel emboldened with, a Biden win. They're sensing that or something. I don't know. I just wanted to pass it on.
Anything's possible. Anything truly is possible, because we sit here and we look at the possibility of a vaccine helping us through this COVID nightmare. That's great. We wish good things for that. But then once it enters the marketplace, how much is the doggone thing going to be? How will it be distributed? Our healthcare disbursement marketplace is filled with pratfalls and places to stub our toes. And I guess we're all going to find out together. Bruce, thank you. Appreciate it very much. Yeah. Just the other day, speaking of Jared Kushner, he's had a busy couple of weeks. He was talking about the difference between what folks pay in Europe for some treatments and what people pay here. Here's a CNBC story. President Trump's senior advisor, Jared Kushner, said he supports the president's plan to cut drug prices, arguing the U.S. shouldn't pay more than European countries for the same treatments. Comments by the president's son-in-law come 2 days after Trump announced that he signed an executive order aiming to lower drug prices. The president said Sunday his most favored nation order will guarantee the U.S. receives the same lower drug prices that the pharmaceutical industry gives to other countries. Kushner said the order is designed to compel drug makers to make their pricing policies fairer across the globe. This has always been such a murky, cloudy, strange world, you know, from the $12 Tylenol in your hospital bill that is that high because insurance pays it unquestioningly. When real people are in the hospital, when real people go to the doctor with just their real money, all of a sudden the price of everything comes down because these folks just want to get paid. Providers just want to get paid. So as if the horizon ahead for a vaccine isn't dicey enough, we're going to get into the price of that thing, the providers of that thing. But I will tell you, the last thing, the absolute last thing anybody needs is Joe Biden or other Democrats politicizing this by talking down the vaccine and creating fog of doubt and stigmatizing it, because the last thing they want is people's lives being saved before November 3rd. The last thing they want is people's lives being saved before November 3rd. Today at noon, Governor Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Patrick are likely to have some news, or they will have some news, about revisions in the Texas guidelines, and we might see a restaurant opening up to 75%. Boy, I got a restaurant question for you. How good have you become at measuring 6 feet? It's like car lengths. Remember, you need to, in following a car, you need to have one car length for every 10 miles per hour of speed. What's a car length? Who can do that? What do I have, radar eyes? And that's why I remember a driver's ed instructor told me about the 2 second rule. When you see somebody in front of you, they pass some landmark like a sign, go beep, one, two. And then if you pass it in less than 2 seconds, you're following too closely. Anyway, but the 6 feet thing, I imagine myself lying on the ground, because that would be 6'3". And it's like, okay, if my feet were right here, would my head touch that table full of people? I'll just flat tell you, and we either care or we don't care. You know, because when you go into a restaurant, and restaurant life has changed in the last couple of months. You used to be able to, you know, walk into the restaurant without a mask. Maybe the wait staff was going to be wearing them, but you weren't necessarily if you didn't want to, because you're in a restaurant. You're going to sit down. You're going to eat. You're going to take the thing off anyway. Now it's kind of like the expectations have changed that when you walk into the restaurant, you better be masked up. And then once you sit down, it's time to start ordering drinks and food and stuff. You can then take the mask off. But we have been in restaurants indoors. We've been on some patios and such. And some folks are doing incredible jobs of distancing. I'll tell you, a restaurant that's doing probably its job of distancing. I'll flat tell you a story. When we were just glad to get out of the house for our anniversary, our anniversary was September 6th. That was the week that I was gone. Thursday or so of that week, because we didn't want to go in the middle of the crowds, such as they are. We went to Papa's there on Northwest Highway and in North Dallas there at Papa's. Big. I like me some steak, and so we were in there. It's a beautiful restaurant. It's one of our go tos for big, wonderful, fancy schmancy occasions, and we had not been in there, you know, since the COVID. And so we go in there, and we're in a booth, and we like booths because there's a certain added insular feeling of safety in the booth. But the tables at Papa's were were probably 10 or 12 feet. I mean, the place, and every table had somebody at it, but the place was still about half full. Now, that seems to be like the way kind of you ought to do that, right? The other way to do that is keep your tables where they are, but just only fill half of them.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, it is a little too tempting. Let's say you and I have a restaurant. And we're going to say, okay, 50% will fill half our tables. So it's a nice, busy, beautiful night. And half the tables are full by 6:30. And then four more parties show up. What will you do? Well, I guess in order to stay at 50%, you got to make them wait. Well, and then you have the quandary of waiting. Where do you wait? You can't stand around, breathe on each other there, you know, by the check-in stand. So you find a way to shoehorn those people on into some of those tables. We have totally sat at restaurants and had people at tables right next to us. And I don't run screaming from the building or anything like that. I was like, But it's so as we go to 75, if we go to restaurants at 75, first of all, by the way, there's a part of me, a big part of me that says, just open stuff. Just do it. I mean, I don't run across. You'll get your occasional viral video of some jackwagon walking into Target and going, "Freedom! Screw the mask! Woo!" And you know, that is so rare and odd. That's part of why it becomes viral, is it just doesn't happen very often. I think most people are doing an incredible job of mask etiquette. And all the stuff we're supposed to be doing, distancing, staying away from people, keeping out of their grill. I know I am, and I know most of you are as well. Just open stuff. We're going to get to the point, and this is funny. This is why I said if Governor Abbott does come out today at noon and say, okay, we're going to 75%, there will be two reactions. One is great. You know, it's a step toward 100. It's a step toward normalcy. The restaurant industry will say that's better than 50. Others in the restaurant industry will say you're still killing us. And there are a lot of folks who will just continue to go right after the governor and say that that's 25 too low. You're still a dictator. Oh, my gosh. OK, so we'll see what the governor does at noon today. But once you get to, what does a 75% full restaurant look like? Looks pretty much like a full restaurant with maybe a couple of empty tables. Hey, Ben Russell at Channel 5, they sent him out to Billy Bob's at 5 o'clock in the morning. I've been at Billy Bob's at 5 in the morning. I was leaving. Kidding, sort of. But this is Ben. And the interesting thing about Billy Bob's, and oh, do I love me Pam Minnick, the Minnicks, and Billy, I've had so many wonderful, wonderful experiences and nights and taking people to Billy Bob's for a touristy experience and whatever. And what is Billy Bob's? It's the world's biggest honky tonk. It's a big old bar. Well, not anymore. Now it's a big old restaurant because they've sort of jimmied with the rules a little bit. How did that go? And oh my heavens, here's Ben Russell out at Billy Bob's, because as we reopen and we look at bars and restaurants and such, there's a lot of attention to stuff like this.
How many have joined the ranks of Billy Bob's Texas, the world's largest honky-tonk? Now, maybe no one can quite get to the level that Billy Bob's is. We told you they'd reopened recently, but it was not as a bar specifically as it was categorized as before. Billy Bob's is now officially a restaurant in the eyes of the state of Texas. It's not like they just hung a different sign out front. They did this specifically by applying for and getting a new permit through the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission. In order to reopen as a restaurant, any bar must make more than half of its revenue from the sale of food. It does not have to be hot food from a commercial kitchen anymore. That can now be any kind of food, even bar food like chips. As of the beginning of this week, a lot of bars have made the move to become restaurants, just under 700 or so statewide, according to the TABC. The governor has ordered all bars in Texas to shut down not once but twice. First, as part of the general statewide business lockdown, then again in late June, specifically about concern that bars were contributing to the spread of the coronavirus. Now, in light of all of this, the president of the Texas Bar and Nightclub Alliance calls it a regulatory circus for his member groups. The impact of COVID-19, he tells us, has been devastating on our industry. Because of extended closures, over 30% of our membership has closed down permanently. Many more will unfortunately follow. Every day this goes on is the last for someone in our industry.
That's right. That is right. Already 866-660-5759. We are in Fort Worth. Hey, Paul, good Thursday morning. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm a little aggravated still. You're talking about restaurants, so I got a little restaurant experience that I I encountered this weekend is actually Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It was at a Gordon Ramsay Steakhouse in Las Vegas.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I love that place. Go there all the time every year.
Right.
This particular situation was different. We were waiting to get our table, and you know, everybody's got to wear a mask. So I had a Trump 2020 mask on.
Good.
And you know, and so they called us up. This girl, she's probably about, you know, 22 maybe.
Right.
And as soon as I walked up, you could tell the look in her eye, piercing glare at me.
A chill.
Right at my mask.
Right.
Spun around quick, took us to her table.
Okay.
She was about 15, 20 feet in front of us.
Right.
And we go sit down. I said, thank you. The manager comes up 2 minutes later, says, was there a problem with the hostess?
Ooh.
I said, no, why?
Yeah.
Goes, did she do anything to offend you? I said, no.
Right.
She goes, well, she's offended because she said you called her the B word.
Excuse me?
I said, that's exactly what we said. We said, excuse me?
Right.
He said, well, yeah. So she's a little offended. I said, well, I could tell you she's lying.
Right.
I said, I would never. I said, I call everybody maybe sweetie or honey. If she's offended by that, then I apologize. I said, I would never say that.
Yeah.
So we order dinner. And as soon as we order dinner, the manager comes back. She goes, my hostess doesn't feel comfortable with you being here, so I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
But the hostess is done with you. She's 50 feet away welcoming other people in the restaurant. What skin is it off her nose that you happen to be at a table deep inside the restaurant?
Yeah. So now I'm living.
Okay.
So they're taking us to the front, and I said, I demand to see my accuser
right.
and confront her.
There you go.
She is dead wrong.
Good for you.
And she says, well, no, we can't do that. I'm going to call security. I said, you call whoever you want. So we let my buddy pull me out. He goes, you know she targeted you. Oh, I know.
Of
so
course.
I went right to the casino host manager, and I said.
No. Cellular burp. Oh, well, I guess.
Go up as high as I can the food chain.
And I'm going to try to survive here. Hey, Paul, we got a huge cellular burp. Let me see if I can grab you for 10 final seconds. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, we lost about the last 30 seconds, but I get it. What was the bottom line? What happened? Were you in the middle of the meal? Did you eat for free at least?
No. No, we ordered.
Oh, okay, but it hadn't come yet. Okay, can't do this. Okay, we got 90% of the story, which is enough. How stupid are people? You know, I mean, just how stupid are people? Well, I guess maybe it's a Vegas restaurant. You know, you kick out one person for political bigotry as a result of political bigotry. You know, there's probably 10 more waiting for that table. Goodness gracious me. RD 826, Mark Davis, 6:60 a.m., The Answer. Alrighty then, little Santana to take us into the news break with Gordon Griffin and then PJ O'Rourke in his latest book. He's got hit so many great books. We talk to him every couple of book tours. Very cool guy. You'll enjoy meeting him. His latest is A Cry from the Far Middle, Dispatches from a Divided Land. PJ joins us next. Gordon Griffin in the newsroom right now at 8:32. I'm Mark Davis.
Middle of the road. Trying to find me.
You see what I did right there?
I'm standing in the middle of life with my pants behind me.
Chrissy Hynde, The Pretenders, middle of the road, huh?
For everyone I meet.
Hey, you can't get this kind of clever bumper music usage in any old talk show. Yeah, I tell you, another thing that makes us distinctive, I like to think, is the ability to welcome really cool and interesting people. And the point of that, middle of the road, is the latest from the always genius PJ O'Rourke, A Cry from the Far Middle, Dispatches from a Divided Land. The show just got better. PJ O'Rourke is here. Welcome, sir. How you doing? Oops, hang on a second. Let me hit the right button.
I'm originally from Ohio, so I have a kinship with her. I went back to Ohio and my city was gone.
Yes. And how many people know that that has for eons been, of course, the theme song for?
Cleveland.
Oh, not well, the little thing called the Rush Limbaugh Show.
Yes.
Yeah. And you remember, in fact, Rush had to stop using My City Was Gone because Chrissy Hynde, I guess somebody told her that he was using it, and Chrissy hates Rush, and he said stop that. They had to cease and desist, and only after Rush wrote a massive check to PETA did he get to start using that song again.
The idea of Rush, a well-known meat eater, writing a massive check to PETA.
Exactly.
I think he loved it.
He loved it even more. Okay, so let me go into some of the meat of A Cry from the Far Middle, and then I want to engage in a little bit of back and forth about whether moderation really exists and all of that good stuff, but let's just hop right in. Dispatches from a Divided Land. Are we more divided than ever? Is it worse than ever? Or is it just a function of the white hot temperature of the Trump presidency and the 24-hour media culture?
I would say the latter. I mean, people are always saying to me, oh, I've never seen America so divided. And I'm going like, you know, I'm 72. I was a participant in the 60s. Talk about divided. I mean, you know, and forget the 1960s. What about the 1860s?
Thank you.
You know, 1861. America gets a lot more divided than this. Although whether it does so as noisily or not, or at least away from the front lines of the Civil War battlefields, that's another question. Jeez, I mean, the whole electronic media thing has added this whole new layer of, and I talk about this in the book, whose bright idea was it to put every idiot in touch with every other idiot?
Yeah, and on cable or on Twitter or on whatever, it's just there are so many soapboxes and so many megaphones available that it's, you know, noise is going to be, was always going to be the result.
Noise to signal ratio is so high that it's hard to make out anything but the screech and the squawk of static.
There are portions of the book that I've kind of highlighted in which you said, wouldn't it be great if we had an opinion-free news media source, and you have the perfect name for it, Happy Medium. is that humanly possible? I had a good friend of mine who's a journalism professor, so there's a whole front-loaded argument right there, and he said that it's humanly impossible to be completely without bias, which I kind of believe as humans. If you write a story as a reporter, some of your views might snake their way in there, but at the very least recognize maybe some level of balance. It's like, okay, some of our people here at the network hate Trump's guts. Maybe we should offer up some opinions from people who don't.
Well, that's one step. And the other thing that can be done, no, you can't completely eliminate bias. And a lot of our biases are not something that we consciously understand. I mean, they're sort of cooked into us from our life experience and so on. But what you can do is admit right up front where you're coming from, as we said back in the 60s, is to say, look, you know, I am a liberal Democrat, whether I mean to or not, I'm going to be reporting this through the lens of a liberal Democrat, or I'm a red hat wearing Trump supporter, and you should know that about me before you read the following. If we're just a little more upfront and honest about where we stand, the big lie comes in supposedly being completely dispassionate. Like the New York Times takes this attitude, well, we're rather above the news. You know? And so, I mean, you know, we're speaking from on high. A more vulgar way of putting it would be that we're urinating on you from online.
So rather than expect the Times to become fair and become balanced, better they should just admit and say, we are a liberal newspaper and get ready because here it comes.
Yeah, and that doesn't take a thing away from the fact that they're one of the few newspapers left that still does really good foreign coverage, that still has bureaus out there, that has kept a lot of people hired. And, you know, I read it for that reason. I admire them for doing that. I don't agree. I prefer things like the Wall Street Journal, which can be given the same compliment. But the Wall Street Journal, at least, you know, I mean, Wall Street Journal is about business. It's for business people. And therefore, it's going to take a pro-business point of view. But also, the information in the Wall Street Journal is important to people in making business decisions, so the information is testable. And if the Wall Street Journal were way off base about everything that it writes about, it would lose its readers because they have a practical reason for reading that newspaper.
Indeed. P.J. O'Rourke is here. His latest is A Cry from the Far Middle, Dispatches from a Divided Land, and it's filled with absolutely trademark P.J. O'Rourke brilliance on things like partisanship and our media-soaked crazy world, et cetera, et cetera. I was having a conversation with someone about moderation the other day, and I want to run 30 seconds of it by you, and that is that I think that actual moderation, actual middle-of-the-roadness is kind of a myth, and that most people who think they are moderate, or when you think about a moderate, you're not thinking about somebody who's on the fence on most things. We're usually thinking about people who are conservative on some things and liberal on others. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, it does. And there's nothing in my book that pleads for people to actually be in the middle, that is to say, undecided. What I would like in this country is for us to get is to remember that we are a family. We're a big, quarrelsome family. Coming from a big, quarrelsome Irish family myself, I am perfectly aware of the dynamics of this. I don't want people to quit arguing. The issues are important, and they need to be argued out. So I'm not opposed to some screaming at the dinner table. I'm not opposed to some slammed doors. But I am opposed to burning the house down with everybody in it. It's not so much that you're moderate in your views. You need to have a certain moderate reasonableness and an argument to make sense in your attitude, in the way you carry your and present your views. You're not going to win any hearts and minds by breaking the window at Neiman Marcus.
No, and in fact, and that's what has led me to a sad conclusion, and that is that the era of trying to win people over and saying, hey, I have something reasonable I want you to consider, that's over. And not to just pick on the racial discord of the moment and the Black Lives Matter stuff, although that is the top example, is I don't think these kneeling NBA athletes are interested in starting a discourse or a dialogue. They simply want to show us how virtue signaled they are, how mad they are at the status quo. And it is a rant. It is a tantrum. And the heavy lifting, the far less sexy work of finding goodwill and room to make progress in issues of race and policing, which we clearly have some, that's much harder, and it's even harder to do because we're involved in all these theatrics and sideshows.
Oh, absolutely. And let's not say that the era of reasonable argument is over, but I think we can fairly say it's on pause.
Yeah.
the first thing that any reasonable person should be able to say to their opponents is, I am willing to change my mind. There's a great story about the economist John Maynard Keynes, who was kind of a stinky lefty as far as I'm concerned, but never mind. He was a great economist. And a journalist once accused him of being inconsistent in what he said. And Keynes said, "Sir, when my information changes, I change my mind. What do you do?"
It sounds, as soon as you give that quote, it takes me right to COVID, where the information changes seemingly by the hour. Which means, so you've got Biden busting Trump in the jaw every day for like suggesting that maybe he would have done something better back in March. You have a president that wants to walk a line between not seeming to be enslaved to the wondrous world of masks, but not being anti-mask. Give me a paragraph or two on the virus is troublesome enough, but in the current environment that you define in the book there, Cry from the Far Middle, it's like it's even harder.
Yeah, I mean, we've just seen no leadership on this at all. I got to say, I blame President Trump a good deal. I sometimes feel that even if he had led us in the wrong direction, might have been preferable to no leadership at all. He's simply been all over the place. The idea that Joe Biden is like somehow got a fix for this is an interesting one, because there don't seem to be no fix for this.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm intrigued. What would leadership look like? I mean, I know that's 2020 hindsight. We're asking you to do it, but what would if a President Trump or any president had quote unquote shown leadership, if your assertion is that he didn't, what would it have looked like to show leadership?
Well, first place, an outright admission that we're a federal system and that federal government can't just impose everything on everybody. So the first thing to do would be get the 50 governors on board and say, let us coordinate our practices as best we understand them, you know. And the second place is to look around as best one can and not only to listen to the scientific experts, but to look around as best we can and see what has worked best in the places that have been hit least hard by this, what has worked worse in the places that there is a way to go out and conduct business and bring the economy back to life without having super spreader events. And you know, I'm no expert on this field, and it's beginning to look like neither is anybody else.
my point exactly. Yeah. I knew you would get there, but finish up. I'm sorry.
A certain amount of caution is definitely required, and the mask is no big deal. The Lone Ranger wore a mask.
Here's the funny thing, though. Here's what you know: masks themselves not really problematic. The mask idea of a mask mandate is horribly poisonous. And the problem is that so many people came at us with this know-it-all authoritarianism that it colored and jaded everything they've told us since.
That is so true. That is so true. Is that a coordinated and united effort to make sure that people mask up under the circumstances that they need to, and that they don't have to carry this to ridiculous extremes, being masked out in the middle of the Mojave Desert, you know, while people are talking.
Exactly right. I have a recommendation for people, and that's to hit Amazon or wherever you want and go get A Cry from the Far Middle, Dispatches from a Divided Land by P.J. O'Rourke. And then while you're there, go back and grab his book about the 2016 election called How the Hell Did This Happen? P.J. is the master of the masterful title. Pardon me for PG-13 for a moment. I think my favorite, this is about a 10-year-old book now, called Don't Vote. It just encourages the bastards. It's the great P.J. O'Rourke Library. I love you, man. I wish you great health, and I can't wait till we can talk again.
Thanks, Mark. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. P.J. O'Rourke, Cry from the Far Middle, Dispatches from a Divided Land. 852, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. It is Hank's birthday.
I got a feeling of the blues. Lord, since my baby said goodbye.
Lovesick blues.
Lord, I don't know what I'll do. All I do is sit and sigh.
Hank, born 97 years ago today, 1923.
Well, Lord, I thought I would cry. She'll do me, she'll do you.
Didn't make it to 30. But boy, what a career. What a legacy. On Hank's birthday, we throw you some Hank in the middle of the bumper library, and one more hour to go, and we're going to throw you some phone calls, and I'll throw you some opinions, all kinds of things being tossed about. That was very cool with P.J. O'Rourke, and one of the reasons I love him is I agree with him on most things, on some things, maybe not, but it's always fun, it's always engaging, and the book is great, A Cry from the Far Middle, Dispatches from a Divided Land. All righty, 866-660-5759, Mark Davis, one more hour to go. Let's see what we'll make of it next.